This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 143. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Well, thank you, Announcer Bot, and welcome to How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. And just to remind you, we have a new Facebook fan page. Just search for SF Productions Podcast Network. All our podcasts will fall under that Facebook page. Then you can also go to SF Podcast Network for the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs. Or go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, where you can leave us a review.
And you can contact us through the website or email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can catch us on Twitter at SFPPN or call our voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. And again, as part of all these changes, the website will be changing. If all goes well, we think next week.
Yes, well.
We're going to flip the switch.
Perhaps even sooner.
Perhaps even sooner. So, changes are coming. The Flash, number 9, by Johns and Manapole. So, this is the Road to Flashpoint.
So is this technically the first Flashpoint title we're seeing?
I would say so, yes. I mean, there was also that Booster Gold last week. I think it was Booster Gold. Or no, it was the end of Time Masters.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The end of that, and they kind of had some hints toward Flashpoint.
Time Masters was pretty much a waste of time, wasn't
it? Yes, it was. Pretty much.
Okay.
So the police in Central City are investigating this dead man who looks like a very old man. Now, what's interesting is that he has essentially elongated man's Silver Age costume, the earlier costume, but Barry doesn't recognize it. Is he just trying to hide that he knows, or is this already an effect of Flashpoint?
That could be the case, right?
Right, because this is apparently elongated kid. So some local kid in Central City found some Gingold, which of course is this weird Indian soda pop.
And he found it in the Flash Museum.
Right. Oh, that's right. Yeah. And most people who drink this stuff has no impact, but a few people have this strange reaction and they basically become
Malleable,
and they can stretch their arms and all this. And so the question there is, how did he die and why is he now so old? Again, could this be an impact of the whole Flashpoint thing?
So is Flashpoint general knowledge what's going to happen? I mean, are our listeners aware of what is going to occur during Flashpoint?
If you've read the previous issues of Flash, you have and you've seen some of the promos, and it's not been like rumors, it's been on the DC blogs as to generally what's going to happen. What we believe is going to happen is that Reverse Flash, who we now know has the ability to go into the past and actually change things, is going to somehow radically change the DCU so that most of the heroes are either gone or radically changed, so that presumably, Barry's going to be one of the few heroes left.
Because he can't change Barry.
Because Barry, if Barry doesn't become the Flash, then Reverse Flash doesn't get his powers.
Right.
So he can't really touch Barry, but he can touch everybody else. And they've shown he can touch pretty much everybody else and either make them cease to exist or you know, kill them as a kid or whatever.
Can he affect other Flash characters? Because we're coming up to this point where you're going to talk about the family picnic.
That's a very good point. I assume he can because they don't have a direct connection like he has to Barry.
Okay.
I mean, they all have connection to the Speed Force, but technically, if there were less speedsters, there would be more Speed Force to go around.
Ooh.
So Barry is missing this family picnic, and Jay and Wally and Iris and the kids are there. And question there is, where have they, especially Wally and the kids... Where have they been? They just kind of fell off the face of the earth. I mean, at the end of the last Flash series, Wally said, okay, I'm going to step back and not be the Flash anymore.
Well, maybe he's just not being the Flash
anymore.
Right,
but they just kind of fell off the face of the earth after that. And Barry feels guilty about Reverse Flash, who now, thanks to this handy retcon, killed his mother and framed his father. So he's feeling guilty about all that, and his parents should be at the family picnic, and if only he had stopped Reverse Flash, then that wouldn't have happened, da-da-da-da. And they finally introduced this Hot Pursuit character who they had hinted at and shown pictures of at least 6 months ago. It was like this super fast motorcycle cop who could harness the Speed Force. And we find out it's Barry. It's some sort of alternate or later Barry. And so we see the two Barrys meet each other, and he's there to warn the current Barry that there's this huge time anomaly, which is, of course, Flashpoint coming.
Now, he didn't indicate that he was from the far future or anything.
No. He looks very similar, so presumably he's not all that... He's either from a different continuity, or in fact, he's just slightly after the current Barry. We'll see what happens here. Again, we've talked a little bit about Flashpoint, the fact that there are going to be so many miniseries and so many one-shots. I think DC's overdoing it, as they always do on these types of things. Justice League Generation Lost, number 19, by Winnick and Dagnino. Max Lord still has Jamie, the Blue Beetle, trying to figure out how his armor works. And Jamie,
that was kind of a nice review for the reader also.
Right.
If you hadn't been following Blue Beetle.
Mm-hmm. And as you'll find in a minute, that's why they kind of did that. Did that whole backstory for Jamie. So Jamie is able to get a signal to the JLI. And so they go to try to save him. And it turns out that it's in the ocean. It was below the ocean is where he's hidden out. And it's this cool checkmate ship, which looks like a huge knight chess piece. Again, if you're trying to stay as some sort of secret organization, maybe not making your ships look like chess pieces would not be the best idea.
So impractical and, you know, inefficient of space.
Absolutely.
Aerodynamics.
Right, yeah. It doesn't make any sense. So Jamie reboots the Scarab and is able to attack Max. And Max has apparently learned enough by this point to shut down the armor. And in the last frame, apparently kills him by shooting him in the head, just like he did Ted Kord. Now, I personally am assuming that the Scarab will somehow repair him, or maybe Max is just making the JLI see this in their minds.
I do not believe that they would kill off Jamie. If they do, I am going to have to boycott DC for a little while. I'm sorry.
Yeah. DC has become a very bloodthirsty company in terms of the characters. They introduce characters and then they kill them. They, you know, Ryan Choi, the new Adam, they killed him off. There was that whole during the Infinite Crisis where they had the characters from various Earths who they would literally introduce only so they could kill them in like two panels.
Well, I guess my big problem is that they're killing off all these characters that are the most human characters.
Right.
Ralph and Sue.
Right. Well, yeah, Ralph and Sue's
the big thing. Jamie,
right.
Ryan.
Right.
And I like these characters.
Right.
These are the characters that have always had good human interactions that you could really more relate to than you could a Superman or a Wonder Woman.
Right. And you have to consider that there's a Blue Beetle TV pilot that's out there that they've done some prep work for. And it's based on the Jamie character, at least every indication on the little bit of test footage we've seen that's leaked, that it's based on the Jamie character. So I don't think they killed him. They want to certainly make it look like they killed him. And frankly, if I was Max, that's what I would do, is make the JLI see.
Think that I killed Blue Beetle so that they'd quit looking for
exactly.
him so I could continue to experiment on
exactly.
him. Exactly. That makes sense.
I think that's what happened. Knight and Squire, number 5 of 6 by Cornell and Broxton. And Jarvis Poker, the British Joker, and this is a whole thing of rhyming slang in British language, and that's a big thing in this title. He learns that he has a critical illness and he has weeks to live, and he starts this inconsequential crime spree. It's not really crimes, he's just doing little acts of vandalism or little bits.
Well, I think he's trying to do crime, but it just doesn't work.
Right. And Squire sees what's happening and realizes, based on a conversation she had with Jarvis, that he is in fact dying.
Well, and this is because of her gift of communication skills.
Right, that she was able to see that information.
Put that together, yes.
So Knight and Squire play it up that Jarvis is this criminal genius and, you know, oh, you evil man, what are you doing? Because they realize he's dying and might as well have him go out with some dignity. And Shrike, this character, this new hero who's currently seeing Squire, shows up and finds Jarvis in the middle of one of his crime spree, but Shrike's not in on the joke and thinks Jarvis is dangerous, and so he's going to take him in and put him in jail. And then the real Joker shows up, which really disappoints me, because that's a jarring change to this book, to
it
just
really
suddenly throw that in the next to the last issue. Now, I looked up the sales for this title. Sales are very low. It's actually outside of the top 300 books in December.
Ouch.
Ouch. It's not doing well at all. We're not going to see an ongoing book, which is really a shame, because I really like this book. And I'm wondering if bringing Joker in at this point was part of Cornell's plan from the start for this title, or did DC kind of force this on him to go, you need to goose up the sales? Which, if you're going to do it, why do it on the next to last issue of a miniseries?
Right. That doesn't make sense to me.
Nobody's going to jump in on the last issue of a miniseries if they're not already there.
Now, I'm curious. This brings up a point for me. This seems to me like it would be a good comic to do, say, only digitally.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if it really does cost a lot less to do just a digital comic than it would to do the paper comic.
The impression I've gotten is the vast amount of cost is more toward the artists than toward the distribution. Not to say distribution is and physical publishing isn't. There's cost in there.
There are costs.
But it's not the majority of costs. That being said, yeah, I think DC needs to start looking into ways to taking some of these titles that don't do well otherwise.
That don't do well, but the people who like them really, really like them.
And do digital-only titles. This is their opportunity to do that type of thing. And the big guys aren't doing that. The big guys are not going digital only. I mean, DC did that whole
Zuda.
Zuda was digital only stuff. But that was taking stuff that was completely new characters and concepts. They didn't take one of the established DC characters and turn it into a digital comic. This is your opportunity to do so, DC. And you should really consider that. Cinderella, Fables Are Forever, 1 of 6, by Roberson and McManus.
I was expecting this to be a standalone, much the way the first Cinderella was, and not tie so directly into the ongoing series of Fables.
Yeah, this is the second miniseries of Cinderella as Secret Agent, and Cinderella is up against someone codenamed Silver Slipper. And we're getting into the Russian fables. And the Russian fables are very much hidden, and it's very decentralized. They're not all together. And Cindy finds this Russian fable defector in one of her safe houses, and he's saying, please save me, because Silver Slipper is after him, and he's going to kill him. And we learn in a flashback that Silver Slipper is Dorothy Gale, as in Dorothy of Wizard of Oz.
So she should be Ruby Slipper.
Yeah, that's why Silver Slipper doesn't make any sense.
Maybe we'll figure out why later.
Yeah, we'll know eventually why. So Dorothy already has spies going after Cindy to find out what she's doing, including some silverware soldiers, for lack of a better term.
Yes.
I did enjoy the first issue. It is interesting that they're tying it much closer to the current storyline. The first Cinderella was very much separate. You didn't really know when it happened in the overall storyline.
Well, you knew, though, it wasn't in the current
right.
storyline because
right.
they still had Fabletown in New York.
Yeah, yeah.
But here we actually had a scene from the farm evacuation.
Right.
And it's directly tying into the events on the farm because there was a murdered magician at the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Who they think Silver Slipper killed.
And Cinderella has to go to one of her safe houses because her main apartment in Fabletown is gone, as Fabletown's gone.
Yes.
Love and Capes Ever After, 1, by Thomas Zoller. IDW bought this book, so now it'll be an IDW title.
Now, I'm going to preface this by saying we bought the first two collections, mm-hmm. 1 through 12, which is sort of like the courtship and the wedding,
mm-hmm.
At C2E2 last year, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did.
And so I've been waiting for this to come out.
Right.
And waiting.
Well, my guess is it's probably been available for a while. I mean, been ready for a while. But they just had to work out the purchase through IDW and get it in the schedule.
Right.
So this is what I would consider a gateway title for how you get your wife to read comics.
And really, if you want to get her to read superhero comics.
Right, right. Because this is superhero meets soap opera to some extent. The Crusader character, the main character, is now married. And most of the book is talking about their quote-unquote normal life.
Right. In this issue, they have to find an apartment to share together. Instead of his apartment and her apartment, they want their apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And then Abby's bookstore is having some problems, and she needs to find a new place to put it. So basically, it's about what to do once you're married.
Setting up a regular married life. Now, the characters in this are rather close to DC archetypes. You see the Trinity analogs. I mean, Crusader is essentially Superman, and Dark Blade is basically Batman, and Amazonia is basically Wonder Woman.
Right. But you're also seeing them, like, in regular life, too.
Right, and trying to be regular people.
Yes. And I really love they introduced Dark Blade's housekeeper, or really gave her more of a story in this mm-hmm. one. His Alfred, so to speak.
Right.
And she is funny.
Yeah, yeah. And at one point, Crusader knows this other hero who happens to be also a real estate agent. And so he goes over to, literally flies over to talk to him, and they're out patrolling the streets. And while they're doing it, they're saying, hey, by the way, you know, if you could give me any help on trying to find a nice apartment. And of course, what does a superhero want in an apartment or a house? Well, they want a skylight.
Yes.
And they want a way to discreetly exit the building without. And so they're doing the regular apartment hunting. But in each case, it's like, OK, well, it can't go here because
the news station is across the street.
And, and this doesn't work. And at one point they're in an apartment and Mark, the Crusader, says, oh, I think we're done here to Abby. And he whispers to her, there's roaches all through the walls because he has the X-ray vision. And
yeah, and there were a couple other things that I really liked when Mark is talking to the real estate agent superhero, and he says, oh, you know, well, what'll I owe you for this? And the guy says, oh, we're even. You fixed up, you know, for this thing last year. And oh, for when I helped you with this villain? And he says, no, when you helped me with the IRS.
Yeah, because Mark is an accountant.
And then the very last part where Amazonia is coming to Abby for dating advice.
Right.
And she says, well, you know, and Amazonia says, well, is there anything I can do? If there's ever anything I can do for you, just let me know. And Abby says, you could wear pants.
So it's a very cute book, and not clear how many issues this will be. Maybe another six like the last two. We'll see.
Well, hopefully it'll continue to be ongoing.
Yeah.
And they'll just bring it out in trades as they come out.
Yeah.
I do recommend the first two trades. They're very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very fun.
Very
it's
accessible.
Very traditional comic book art.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's so it's easy to figure out how you're supposed to read each page and
right.
everything.
Right.
And so it really is good for that person who hasn't read comics.
All right. So before we get out of here, I think it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Are you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
Okay. When you hear the beep.
TV related?
Yes.
Is it one TV show on
yes.
the cover? Is it one person on the cover?
No.
Two people?
No.
Three?
No.
Four?
No.
So it's a cast? Five?
Yes. It's a big cast.
It's a big cast. Okay, so cast of a TV show. Is it on one of the four major networks?
Yes.
Okay. Is it on ABC?
No.
CBS?
No.
NBC?
Yes.
Okay, an NBC show. Is it a comedy?
Yes.
Is it on Thursday night?
Yes.
Is it, well, I was going to say workplace related, but they're all pretty much workplace related.
Yes, they are.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll just shoot through them. 30 Rock?
No.
Is it, oh, not outsourced, I assume.
No.
Is it Parks and Recreation?
It is Parks and Recreation.
And so Amy Poehler.
And all those other people.
And all the other people. And the rest.
And the rest. Rapo.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know he's on now?
Yeah.
Aziz Ansari.
Yeah.
They're saying it's the best comedy on television now.
Well, I still need to get through season two, and then I can start to catch up on this one. All right. Want to remind you about that Facebook fan page. So search for SF Productions Podcast Network. Go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, for other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, and please leave us a review.
You can contact us through the website or email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Catch us on Twitter at sfppn. Or call our voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. And be sure to tune in next week when we give details of a wondrous contest.
Ooh, there's a teaser. We'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.